Listen, I've always wanted to open a beer on recording. How is that? Did that sound good?
Honestly, no.
I'm drinking an old Santa-themed cider because I got leftovers.
Ooh.
And it's supposed to taste like
Huh.
an apple pie.
Does it?
I don't know. It tastes pretty good, though. It's called Santa's sauce. I like it.
I actually just saw this article. Instead of dry January, consider damp January, where you just drink less. So
You
that's a
just drink
thing.
less.
Let's get into it.
Okay, cool. So, welcome everyone to Bottomless Broadway, where we talk musicals over mimosas. We're like kind of in the full swing of reviewing new musicals this season now. And today we're going to talk about harmony. I don't have 5 words, but I have 6 words.
Okay.
And it's pretty bad. But I thought about ways to shorten it to 5 words, and it's possible, but it just doesn't convey the energy I'm trying to convey,
All
which
right.
is, in the words of Charli XCX, I don't care, I love it. Because I love this show so much. And I even like the music and the cast recording. I feel like no one's talking about it, and I just don't care.
The bad 5 words that I came up with were just act two makes it worthy. And I did, for what it's worth, really enjoy this show the first time we saw this off Broadway, which was last year, a
And
couple
that
years
wasn't
ago.
the first time you saw it.
No, so this show has had a long, long road. But it was in LA in like 2014, and I remember going with my parents up to LA, and my mom like loves Jewish stories, so she was like, I like musicals, I like Jewish stories, let's go see this. And then and I remember like basically just like crying at the end, and then at like a Chinese restaurant afterwards, like Googling the history of the comedian harmonist, which is what the show is about. So I really enjoyed it then. Honestly, like didn't really remember a ton of it when we saw it again off Broadway because it was like almost 10 years and they didn't really have that much of a, like recordings or anything online about it. Did like it a lot off Broadway, saw it again on Broadway. And because this was after the reviews came out and the reviews were like not as positive as I expected them to be. Because when they first announced this transfer, I was like, oh, this is winning Best Musical, which does not seem to be the case anymore. And I, after a second watch, after reading some of the reviews, I definitely see why the reviews were not as positive as I expected. But I do think the second act is a really good second act.
If I look at it critically, like I can see some problems with the execution, but I just feel like the premise of it is so compelling, and I really enjoy the characters and the music that I still would have expected it to do a little bit better than it is.
Yeah, and I think they've had like a marketing problem, and like I think they've had other problems. I also was expecting it to do better despite issues with it because I think the ending is just such a good ending. And normally, if you leave people on a high note, they kind of forget the like bad parts about a show, but it seems like that's not really happening. And I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of stuff about just how Broadway in general, people aren't really taking as many risks with like what shows they're seeing. So like the only shows that really do well are the ones that have big celebrities or are based on large IP brand name kind of things.
I really thought Barry Manilow had more pull.
Well, so apparently it's been a thing where a lot of people have gone to this show thinking it was a Barry Manilow jukebox and then they've been shocked. So
But yeah, I was like vibrating watching this. And then Alice, our friend, was seeing it next to me for the first time. And she was just like, yeah, it's pretty good. And I was just like, oh my God, people
I
don't
could
like this
tell because I
show.
went with Cynthia and I could tell at intermission she was like maybe judging me a little for thinking it was good.
It better off Broadway? Did it maybe like fill the smaller stage better?
I think
Because I
too.
loved it so
I mean, for what
much.
it's worth, after act two, she was like, okay, I understand now. But act one, I could tell she was like questioning it.
Let me give a quick summary.
Yeah.
Okay, harmony. I guess quite literally, 3 Jews and 3 Gentiles form a band called the Comedian Harmonists in like late 1920s Germany. And the story is narrated by one of the members of this boy band who goes by Rabbi. And it kind of begins with them desperately trying to get gigs as a band, all while protests against like Nazism and shit are happening across the country. And then there's also touches on their personal relationships, like Rabbi, who, as you probably assume, is Jewish, marries a non-Jewish woman, and one of his bandmates who goes by Chopin, who isn't Jewish, marries a Jewish woman. So they're all entangled in their one big family. You know, this is like quite a progressive group of people. The band is also largely full of misfits. There's an heir who doesn't want to be an heir, a pianist that plays at horror houses. I don't know. Like, no one really knows what they're doing. No one really knows how to lead a band, but they're just really good singers. They sound amazing together. So they do get their big break at the Barbarina Club when they accidentally put on a comedic musical number, like completely by accident, but it works. And soon they're like touring the world as one of the top bands of the 1930s. But because of the Jewish members of their band, they get like restriction after restriction put on them by Nazi Germany until they're no longer able to leave the country or like perform at all. And I guess, spoiler alert, it doesn't really turn out that well for them. This is like a true story, but like I said, they were like one of the top bands in the 30s, but I think no one has really heard of them. All of their records get burned. The Jewish members of the band run away to the US. The non-Jewish members of the band, in an effort to like make sure their friends escape safely, I guess, stay in Germany. And then they actually eventually get forced to fight for the Nazis. Is that right? That's kind of the impression I got.
They were drafted or something, I think.
Yeah. Shockingly, all of the band members, although not all of the wives, survive the war, but they never get to reunite because, like, you know, shit's just so fucked up. And
yeah.
And then Rabbi, who tells this story in his old age, he is the lone survivor. I feel like he was alive when Barry Manilow first wrote it, but he's no longer alive. So he was the last surviving member of this band. And you can tell that he has a lot of survivor's guilt and like just bearing the weight of this story. And he kind of serves as a very sad narrator. Super quick side note, because I really like bio musicals in general and anything like based on history, because I like to read up on stuff afterwards. But honestly, I feel like maybe because this show's on Broadway now, there will start to be more information on the internet. But when we first saw this off Broadway, I really did struggle to find any deep dives on this band because so much information was erased. But there is a really good history breakdown from New York Theater Guide, where they go through like a short biography of every band member.
Oh, I haven't actually read that.
It's super interesting and has some info that their Wikipedia page doesn't have. And also they talk to some of the people in the cast, and the people in the cast have been playing their roles for a while because we saw the same people off Broadway. So I think they know quite a bit about their own characters. Mm-hmm. It's a really good article, and not just because I built this website.
Cool. I'll link it in the show notes. Yeah, because I remember after seeing it in LA, it was basically just the Wikipedia article and maybe some articles about the show happening, and not much had more information about them. I did think it was really funny when after the show, because they don't use any of the songs that the comedian harmonists originally sang. And so after the show, you were like, oh, I was trying to look up the original songs, and it did not occur to me that they would be in German.
I fucking forgot they were going to be in German. Yeah. I do think the music maybe isn't for everyone. The entire album is a little bit on the somber side, but I really, really like it. I found it pretty easy to get into after watching the show.
Like, the title song is one of those stupidly catchy songs that they also keep singing throughout the whole show. But I think this actually does have a couple of really good ballads. I am going to talk about some issues I have with the book of the show once we get into the show a bit more and like start going through scenes. But I do think the overall structure of it is sound. I love the way it ends.
So the first song is called Harmony, and it actually opens a little bit into the future or halfway through their career when they make their US debut at Carnegie Hall and they're already pretty big, and they start singing Harmony, but then the lyrics and the music kind of then slowly carry you back to when they were first forming the band in Berlin.
Harry starts the band. He basically just puts out an ad looking for people who must be able to harmonize. And then they just like go through the auditions. Everyone's singing in harmony. Ha ha. They form their band. And then you also sort of see them rehearsing together. And it's the very Jersey Boys under a street lamp kind of vibe of them just being poor and rehearsing and trying to get things off the ground. And so it introduces you to each character as they audition and as they give a little bit of their backstory. So I think as an opening number, this works really well.
I really like this as an opening number. And I also like the next two songs as well, which to me is kind of like the triplet of songs that introduce all of the important characters in the show.
Right.
And I don't think all of these three songs are perfect, but I feel like together they really open the show super well, because in harmony, they kind of allude to the political state around them and everything when they're like, others were marching, not us, we danced. You already know what time, where they are, like what's going on, but they don't make it a big focus because the song is about them forming the band and having this incredible harmony. And then throughout the next couple of songs, they introduce the two love interests as well as more of the protesting in the political state. Mm-hmm. But I really like how this song gives a nod to that, but then doesn't really dive into it.
Yeah.
Harmony. Did we have harmony? But that's just about all we have. Suddenly, a little harmony. And the poverty's not so bad. Then we were poor as sin in Berlin. We were patches on our pants. But we had mercifully when you're in harmony, you're in a trance.
The next song is What Do You See? And that is sung by Mary, who is Rabbi's girlfriend. She is basically saying like, hey, look around. You have this very sort of optimistic view. I mean, he did flee from Poland because of mounting political pressure. She was like, well, look around. You know, like things aren't all great here. Like, tell me, what do you see? Do you see a future for us? That sort of thing. And I think it's like a good way of also both introducing a romantic interest as well as introducing just a foil of a character. She is paying attention to the climate while he is just like, look, I'm in this cool new band, like we're gonna be great. And she is really supportive of him, but she is also just like, listen, like things are happening, you got to be smart about this. And so I thought that was really good.
And she's a really cool woman. I feel like the women in this show are not poorly written for a show that's about six men,
right?
Yeah, so I think that's nice. The funny thing about Mary is she's not worried about marrying Rabbi because he's Jewish. She's worrying about marrying Rabbi because he ran away from Poland, which is just like maybe the wrong thing to be worried about. I don't know. She's like, he ran away from anti-Semites once. Should I be worried that he's a coward? And people are like, no.
I look out on a world that's tearing apart. This is what I see. And what do you see?
So the next scene we're introduced to Ruth, who is Chopin's love interest, and she is Jewish. She's also like a revolutionary. So this is like her political protest, essentially. So this song, I have like a couple issues with. Like, I think it's a good song because they do really marry together. Rabbi's conversation with Mary, where he's like, this is our time, like it's our time to be together.
I just want to say, a song starting with this is our time, Mary, this is our time, for a second I was like, am I listening to Merrily We Roll Along? Because I really doubted myself for a second.
But then it like, yeah, so then he says that she's like, you know, reluctantly charmed by him. She's like, this is a problem for later. And then they go to the rally that Ruth is holding, picket signs and everything. This is our time. Like, let's rise up, etc. My problem with this song is it feels so One Day More that literally when the song ended, I was like, this feels like an act one closer song. And like, because it brings in, you know, a bunch of different people and it like just sort of builds and everyone's singing together and they're all singing the same thing. That was, I think, the first part where I was like, this is a little weirdly laid out.
I don't really remember how I felt about it when I was watching the show. I can definitely see that, though. But I do really like it as an introduction to Ruth because
mm-hmm.
she's just so outspoken. And I like how the song starts with Rabbi and Mary, and then the guys kind of join in a little bit because I swear there's a refrain around that's literally kind of like Our Time and Merrily, where
they're yeah.
talking about the band, like referencing the band. Oh, and yeah. like, this is our time. Like, we're going to succeed. We've got the talent. And then the way that Ruth actually enters the song is with the line, time is on our side. And then she picks up the song, which is so heartbreaking to me because I don't really know why she says that. I assume it's just because like they're all really young and they're like, we can outlast this. Mm-hmm. We are the future kind of thing. Right. But she literally comes in belting, time is on our side. It's so sad because it's literally not, like, in terms of how long bands last. They literally have so little time to enjoy their fame and everything mm-hmm. they worked for. I mean, they didn't even, you know, get to cheat on their wives and hate each other yet. So like, I thought that was so sad. And I really like that line from her. And mm-hmm. the other thing about Ruth is I kind of already brought up the spoiler in the summary, but things don't really end well for her because she is so outspoken and she's not a diplomatic character at all. So she kind of fucks with the Nazis a little too hard and probably mm-hmm. dies. And because I recently watched the Color Purple movie that just came out, which I really, really like, she reminds me of Sophia. She's very like, if somebody slaps me, I'm going to slap them back, which is sort of what she does in the show also. And it just makes me so sad because I like characters like this so much, but literally both of their stories are pretty awful.
Yeah. You mentioned how the guys start singing like, oh, this is our time. We're going to be big. Like, we have the talent. Unlike a normal jukebox musical, we haven't really heard their talent. We don't know what kind of act they do. We don't know how much we're rooting for them because we're just like, oh, they're very optimistic, but we don't know why we should care about them over like any other group. And obviously, if we're watching a show about them, we do know they have to make it somewhat big at some point, right? But yeah. It's just like, there's not really an investment in their group as like characters, really. Like, I'm almost more invested in Ruth and Mary at this point, I think, if I didn't really
Ruth
know
and Mary
anything
are
about the
pretty
show.
Cool.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. If you really take a lot of the lyrics from the title song at face value, where they just, you know, talk a lot about how great their harmony was and how it was so beautiful that it closed their eyes to all the shit going on in the world and just stuff like that. Like, if you take it at face value and just believe them, I think it makes sense. But I feel you in that, like, I don't think it's really fair to assume that people heard all of those exact words and believe mm-hmm. all of it. Because also when I was reading more on them, how quickly they rose to fame because of truly how well like their voices meshed together and how it was like genuinely something that people hadn't seen before. I didn't get that from the show.
Right.
Like, I was just like, these six guys can sing. How well? I don't know.
Yeah. I just wish there was more about like why this group was created, how he came up with the idea. I'm not sold yet on the group. In all of the first act, there's only really one real performance number that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And even in like, you know, I mean, Jersey Boys, again, always the gold standard of jukebox bio musicals. But like they have that montage sequence of like when they were training Frankie and stuff and they had the different songs that he would perform in the club, examples of like, oh, you could see the audience reacting. But here, yeah. because I think they wanted to show the revolution in the background, they wanted to show the romantic relationships, like they just didn't really give time for the actual group.
I would also chalk some of it up to the fact that it's not a jukebox musical. So
right.
they just like literally can't show them practicing their songs.
Yeah.
You can't do it, nor can I, but Bobby, we can. This is our time, Bobby, this is our time. Our world, if the world survives, then we've got time, and maybe it could be. Oh, baby, this is our time.
Time is on our side.
us to your son is becoming a singer. Honestly, I don't know if the show needed this song. It's just like the obligatory comedy number that happens about halfway through the first act. Mm. But one of the guys in the group, it's right before they are performing at the Barbarina Club, which is the like fancy club where they got like a last minute gig. And he's like, listen, this was fun when we were still poor and singing in like random back alleys, but I can't do this because I'm actually rich. Everybody's like, the fuck? And he's like, yeah, like my parents come to this club. They think I'm becoming a doctor, but I can't be a doctor because I faint at the sight of blood. My parents will be so disappointed in me. And then they just workshop a way for him to tell his parents about how he wants to be a singer instead. Like, I honestly think in the grand scheme of things, they probably spend too much time on this to give this a song. But it is just like, in the words of Gutenberg the musical, it is a charm song.
I enjoy the song. I think it's a little too early for a comedic break because I'm not tired yet from the first three songs.
Right.
My main problem with it is they don't close the loop on it. His parents are not in the show. He does not update us on,
right,
on what he tells them. It's useful to the plot in the sense that it just gives the band a little bit more alone time to interact, and you can see them like being boys together, I guess. They're acting as Eric's mom and dad, and they're like, oh my God, we're so happy. Our son's going to be a singer. And then Eric's like, no, that's not realistic. So then they're like, oh my God, I'm going to kill myself. My son's being a singer. There are a lot of other ways to show the band spending time together, like showing them rehearsing.
Yeah.
But it does do a little bit of that. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, like I probably would have preferred that this was a rehearsal of one of the actual numbers that they would be doing or something. But yeah, I mean, I think the dynamic across the group that is expressed in this song is nice. It just feels like we're just spending a lot of time on this like one thing that, like you said, never gets any real closure for.
It's something you don't write a letter for. Perhaps if I had the right metaphor. Oh, look at that platter of metaphor. Your son is becoming a singer. Our son is becoming a singer. Isn't this a happy day? Thank the Lord, our Eric's becoming a singer.
Whenever we thought of the pus and the blood
and the phlegm and the crud
and the sharp utensils,
what else can we say? Our son is becoming a singer.
From there we get into Every Single Day, which is another Mary and Rabbi scene.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think this is a great song. Traditionally, you've mentioned this, I've been pretty harsh on ballads in shows with newer scores. I think this is a great ballad. So Rabbi is trying to propose to Mary. Mary, if you remember, has a lot of misgivings about whether or not she wants to marry him because she thinks he's a coward and will just run at the sight of trouble. And he's like, listen, I can't promise you a lot about the future, but I just know that like every single day I will love you and, you know, we'll be together. And as long as we're together, we can make it work.
Why do you like it? I like it, but I like a lot of ballads.
He is just like very earnest, but also I just think the melody has that sort of like sweeping quality that makes me really believe him. Because a lot of ballads, I think, have good lyrics, but the melody is just a little lacking. A ballad has to really have a strong melody for you to remember it. And I think that's why I am a little harsher on ballads. But this one, you like feel his earnestness. You kind of feel how young he is too, I think, when he sings it.
It feels very modern to me almost. Very, very recently with the more popularization of therapy and stuff, people have been realizing, oh, like I don't want somebody to tell me like I'll love you forever, I'll always be kind and patient, and instead you want someone that's kind of like committed to working on it with you. That's what he's saying. He's just like, I know I'm a fucking idiot, but I commit to working on it for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And another reason why I feel like this has good ballads, and dude, I have no idea how this happens. Like, there's no science to it, and I don't know if anyone else will ever feel this way. But I already said This Is Our Time was reminding me of Merrily just because of the lyrics. But Every Single Day, as well as a later ballad, Where You Go, when I'm like humming it, I keep interspersing it with Not a Day Goes By.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of concept, Not a Day Goes By and Every Single Day do have like a lot of similarities in just like kind of what they're saying.
Just days.
Yeah. So I definitely see that comparison.
I'm like, if I confuse it with Not a Day Goes By, it's probably a really good song.
Yeah.
Maybe you were right. Just forget that emptiness within. So if you go before that moment's gone, look at me the way I'll remember every single day from now on.
And now we finally get to their first performance number. This is like, I don't know, three quarters of the way through the first act already. I mean, this one is just fun. It doesn't really have a huge thing to do with the plot, except just to show that they're like pretty good at coming up with ideas on their feet, because they were supposed to have tuxes and then the tailor fucked up or something. I don't remember exactly. And they're just like, yo, okay, get us waiter uniforms. We only need the jackets. They do this whole thing just like in their boxers. It's a pretty fun number. It's also racy. That's not the word I'm looking for, but like, you know, it's like suggestive.
The song is How Can I Serve You, Madame? Because we never mentioned that.
Yeah.
Just so people know what we're talking about. But yeah, it is kind of their big break. And this costume mishap is the reason why they went from being the harmonist to the comedian harmonists, because they, you know, do this whole thing in half a waiter uniform in their boxers. And so it's really funny and it's a huge hit. And that's how they kind of pivot their thing to be not just great harmonists, but also being funny in their musical numbers, which they carry on through like the rest of their career. And they're like covering their lower half with serving trays and stuff. And they make jokes about each other's dicks.
Well, there's like different sizes of serving tray.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they get married because I guess they're rich now.
Chopin is, in my opinion, the heartthrob of the show.
Oh, for sure.
His whole background is pretty funny because he is the whorehouse pianist. And so, you know, he's already got kind of this like risque background. And he's like, yeah, this prostitute told me I play like Chopin. I was deeply disappointed to learn about his actual life story, because turns out he was rich as fuck.
Oh.
He went to the same school as Eric, the heir. And that's how he met Eric. And that's why Eric is even in the band. In fact, everyone is a friend of a friend except Bobby. Bobby's the only one who actually auditioned for the band, which kind of put things into perspective, because Bobby is the one that's like, is he a Nazi? And you do find out he isn't. But just knowing that everyone else was kind of friends before and he's the hard ass in the whole show is kind of enlightening to understand his character for me.
How can I serve you, mamselle, if what I do to pleasure you exposes my love? No! How can I serve you, mamselle? I think you'd see what I'm thinking of.
I think she sees it. There's so much I'm hiding, chérie.
Big talker.
And if I dare to let it all be bared, oh, what you'd see.
And if what you see, instead I'll hide my pain.
And then they go on tour. and they have like a really quick montage of like them getting famous, which I also wish they had spent a little more time establishing, because I feel like we just saw their first performance ever and now they're suddenly famous.
I agree. And it kind of takes you some time in the next scene to realize how famous they are, because you're kind of like, sure, they're on tour in the US. Like, small bands can go on tour too, you know? Yeah. So you're kind of like, okay, like they're doing well for themselves. But then it's like all of a sudden they're being asked to be in the Follies with Josephine Baker. Albert Einstein wants to see them backstage. And so I think it takes like a couple minutes into the scene for you to really realize that, which isn't super ideal.
I think most of my issues with the first act is it feels like a lot of telling and not showing. It's just like, okay, we're just going to tell you that they're famous now and you just have to accept it. And like, yeah, once you're caught up, it's fine. But it just doesn't give you that same like, yeah, they made it kind of, you know. that you get.
Yeah, because that was such a big moment in Jersey Boys. Like, mm-hmm. you feel such like a thrill for them.
Yeah.
And yeah, honestly, the whole opening number is like telling you they have harmony.
Then we end up in 1933 at Carnegie Hall. This is where we opened. And right afterwards, I think it was like NBC offered them a deal or something where they would basically like move full time to the US, continue like touring the US and everything. And they have this big argument over whether or not they should do it. Mary is with them in Carnegie Hall. Ruth is still in Germany doing like, you know, protest stuff. And they're talking about just like the political environment in Germany. Again, they're all pretty optimistic about it.
It feels like Ruth is maybe in an echo chamber because she's, yeah. you know, writing them letters or calling them mm-hmm. and being like, things are looking up. You guys should come home. And everyone in the audience is like, the fuck?
Yeah. And I can't remember who was really trying to get them to stay. I know Mary was definitely a fan of like moving to the US because she was like, I gotta be smart about this. If shit happens, who knows if Rabbi's just gonna run away or not.
She's on board with running away now. She's like, let's be proactive about it.
If we run away now, it'll be okay. Bobby specifically is the one that's like, why would we leave? We're German, like we're not American, like we should just go home. And yeah. I don't remember where everyone else really fell. Like Chopin, I think, believes Ruth.
Home is such a sad song because it's just like, as an audience, you already know shit's gonna go poorly. Yeah, like Bobby, he's just kind of like, the US is gonna get tired of us. We need to go home. That's where we belong. And then old Rabbi as a narrator comes in. And this is like the first time we really get like a close-up view of his guilt, because mm-hmm. he's just like, oh my god, like I should have sided with Mary, I should have thought about this harder, I shouldn't have just listened to Bobby. If only I had said something, maybe we would have stayed and nobody would have died.
It is really difficult to consider leaving your home country, and like especially leaving to a country where it's like not your first language and stuff.
Yeah.
So like I totally understand that decision. Rabbi, looking back on it, is just like so hard on himself for that.
Is this, I think this is the scene where Mary is also like, we should stay. Like Mary, she got great head, great mind. She got great mind. And she's like, we need to fucking stay, guys. And Bobby is like, you're not part of this band. You need to shut the fuck up. And she's like, excuse you.
You could hurry back to the infirmary, you to the shtetl. Do you think we could settle? Waiting tables, playing brothels, and the memories rattle around us all our days. Don't topple the throne, just leave it alone. Hell, I say we all just go home. Home where they know
it's still home.
And here together.
It's our home.
Under a sky that
there's found a place to place our star.
Also, we find out a little bit more about how rich Eric is, I guess, because he's currently dating Josephine Baker, which I think is historically accurate.
And he's like family friends with Albert Einstein. He calls him Albie.
Oh, yeah. Josephine Baker is going to be in Follies and invites all six guys in the band to star in the Follies with her. But then, you know, they sing Home, and at the end of Act One, you know that they're probably going to go home. Act Two opens with We're Going Loco as a number in the Follies.
Yeah.
Which is just mean because because they're literally like three quarters of the way through this number. And then Rabbi comes out and is like, no, that is not what happened. We were not in the fucking Follies because we went home and suffered.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, that sucks. I guess it is a smart way to kind of put in a chill act two opener in such a heavy part of the show.
Yeah. And it also just number. Like, plays with expectations a little, because you really do hope for them, you know. Like, I mean, the whole show is trending down, like in terms of what's gonna happen. You're like, this probably will not end well. But then you get to act two, you know, you have a drink at intermission or whatever, you get to act two, you're like, I'm ready to see what happens. And you're like,
they're in the Follies.
Yeah. Maybe it'll be okay. And then it's not. And you're like, oh, shit. So the next two songs are performance numbers. This is where you really actually like them as a group because you're like, whoa, they do great performances. It's like a completely fake instrumental one where
it's an acapella instrumental.
Lesh is pretending to play the violin. He's like singing the part of the violin. They also go into this whole dance number. This is like a really athletic dance number. There's a lot of jumping and turning. It's definitely a crowd pleaser. It's a really like, oh shit, these guys are good.
I do really like Hungarian Rhapsody on the cast recording, and I'm glad that they made like a song with no lyrics, like that it made it onto the cast recording.
I think at this point, they're still on a Europe tour. They're like not really going back to the States, but they're still going around Europe. The Führer comes and talks to them and he's like, listen, you know, we're not like a huge fan of Jews, but you're really popular, so we'll let you keep performing. But just, you know, maybe put on a good show for the other European countries and show them that Germany is great. And then they go to Copenhagen and they sing Come to the Fatherland, which is like a puppet number. Like they all dress up as like marionettes, basically. And it's a very satirical number where they are essentially like, Germany is controlling your every move, and like, we want all these people, unless you're a Jew. Just like a very political number. And that was also very cool of them to do.
They're just like, come to the fatherland. Everything's great. We have Oktoberfest. It's even better if you don't have a brain and can't think for yourself, because they're terrible. And yeah, it is like with the puppet imagery and everything, pretty fucking damning. Yeah, and I don't remember if this happens before or after, but like you mentioned, the Führer is like, yeah, you guys are really good. Also, his wife is a big fan and like asks for autographs. Mm-hmm. And so he visits them backstage and the band is kind of like lukewarm accepting him because they don't want to be in trouble. But they're like, we really don't want this guy here. But then Ruth, of course, just like starts screaming at them because that's who she is. Mm-hmm. And then there's a book scene where, as the Führer is leaving, Bobby goes to kind of walk him out. And Bobby, who's like the guy that I was mentioning earlier, wasn't originally friends with anyone and who actually auditioned. And he's also not one of the Jewish members. Mm-hmm. He's just like, hey, man, can you put in a good word for us with whoever controls the arts with you people? And just, you know, just like, I would just love to keep performing. And this guy is like, sure, bro. I really like you. My wife really likes you. I can do that. And then he's like, in return, can you do me a favor and tell me what's the name of the woman who just like yelled at me? Mm-hmm. And Bobby is like, no. Bobby is just one of those people that's like not trying to get politically involved and is just like, I'm just not going to fuck with anybody. But then when it comes to the people he loves and stuff, he does have the right morals.
He's like, listen, we got to be smart about this. Like the Führer has a lot of power. There's no point to just always stating your opinion when he can just shut you down immediately. But then it is really like put to the test when he asks for Ruth's name. And it is like a good moment to really show fully whose side Bobby is on.
Bobby also feels the most ambitious because in the last act, when they're first preparing for the Barberina Club and stuff, Bobby is like, dude, we are street performers. We don't have our shit together. You need me to help you orchestrate and like do shit. And he's ambitious. And then even when he sings Home, because he is the main voice on Home, which is the act one finale, other than like when Old Rabbi comes in with his survivor's guilt, he is very like, sure, let's not return to Germany. Let's just give up on our singing career. Sure, let's just be like fucking scared of our lives and let's just go back to doing whatever the fuck we were doing before. Let's continue playing piano at whorehouses.
Right.
And he's just like, he's very like, is that what you guys really want to do? So like, he is really ambitious. So I feel like he's just kind of willing to bend a knee to the Nazis if it doesn't really hurt anyone that he cares about in order to save their careers.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, like in this moment, you're kind of like, okay, he's not sus. Because up until this point, I was a little bit like, is he going to give someone up?
Yeah. So I think like at this point, they might have some restrictions on what they could do. Also, I think this might be the moment where we find out that Eric is Jewish, because Rabbi and Harry, they like talk to each other in the beginning where they're like, oh, look, a fellow Jew. In the off-Broadway version, I just assumed they were all Jewish. It was done at the Museum of Jewish Heritage. I was like, it's a Jewish show. I just assumed the whole group was Jewish. And then they were like, there are three Jews. And I was like, there's only three? And then on stage, they were like, there's only two of us. And I was like, wait, what?
Who is what? Here we never choose or think. Tell us where to go. If the lemming's at the brink, we don't want to know. Come to the fatherland. The Führer has decreed. Saxon, and your hair is flaxen.
We want you to breed.
They have some restrictions, but like not all restrictions that a lot of other Jews are getting. So they go to Cologne to shoot a movie. Because, you know, Ruth had sort of like been outspoken in front of the Führer and like stuff like that. And she just like isn't really stopping with all her revolutionary tendencies. Her and Chopin get into an argument. It's like a pretty cutting argument because she is just like, well, you're not even Jewish. You wouldn't understand why I need to like stand up and fight for things. Well, it would be so much easier for you if you like didn't have a Jewish wife. Like, you should just leave me. And he's like, yeah, you're right. It would be easier, but I love you. Like, I'm not going to do that. And it just like devolves. And Mary and Rabbi are just like listening to this whole thing. And Rabbi also is kind of just like, listen, like, you don't need to be involved in this. You're not Jewish. And so then Mary starts singing Where You Go. She's saying, when I married you, I also married into your culture and your faith and your religion. And she's like, where you go, that's where I want to be. Like, we're in this together. You can't get rid of me that easily. And then Ruth also starts singing it like in her separate hotel room after her argument. I do like this song. I don't like this song as much as Every Single Day, but I think it's a good song.
I think similar to Every Single Day, it has that same like earnest voice to me, because even like when Mary starts singing, she's like, I married you, where you go, I will go. And Rabbi is kind of like brushing her off a little, like not like in a rude way, but he's just like, yeah, yeah, I get it. Like, we are a unit, but we need to talk about this serious problem. And she's like, no, no, you're not hearing me. I'm saying that I will follow you wherever you go and like whatever choice you make. And it's really heartbreaking. You know, one room over, Chopin and Ruth are basically breaking up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to judge her because I'm sure a lot of shit happened, you know? But yeah. Then like the next time so she literally runs the fuck away. And then the next time they hear from her, they're like, oh yeah, she got arrested trying to cross the border. And I was like, bitch, I thought you were staying. If you were crossing the border, you should have waited for your husband.
When it starts, take my hand and whether it's through hell or to the promised land, God knows where I'll be there, where you go.
And the whole group has agreed to basically like, the non-Jewish people have agreed to essentially give up their pay for like the Jewish people to be able to leave and have enough resources to flee.
I wanted to talk about that because earlier you were saying like they're shooting a movie, but I think we missed out on a couple of details. At this point, a lot of Jewish artists and creatives can no longer perform, but because Eric has friends in high places and also like Bobby put in a good word with the fear or whatever, they have an exemption. Their exemption is about to run out, like in the next scene or something. They're literally like, you guys can no longer perform, and they burn all their records. But at this point, they are still part of that exemption. They go to shoot this movie. And they've shot a lot of movies before. Like, this isn't like a branching out thing, but they go to shoot this like random movie because the director is an old friend of Eric's who has agreed to pay them in cash. Right. And they need to be paid in cash because the Nazis are monitoring their bank accounts, because they're technically still allowed to go abroad to tour right now. Mm-hmm. But they basically just like can't take out all of their savings, because then it's clear that they're running away and like their bank accounts are being monitored. So they kind of like on the DL shoot this movie, get paid in cash, and the cash is really only enough to buy fake documents and train tickets and whatnot. and some pocket money probably to get the Jewish members of the band across the border. Mm. And the other three people have to stay because they literally like don't have enough liquid money to, yeah, to get everyone out.
Yeah.
The next book scene, Ruth has run away and they know that she got arrested at the border. And I don't know where they're performing, but they're getting ready to perform at like another venue or club. And Chopin isn't there. And people are like, what are we going to do if Chopin isn't here? And I forget who says it, probably like Rabbi or Harry, but they're like, I'm like, I would be so happy if he doesn't make it, because that might mean that they actually let him talk to Ruth and he wasn't just turned away. And then sadly, he was just turned away. As they're getting ready to go on, the Führer comes back and he's like, this is the very last performance you guys will do because your exemption has run out. And that's really like, it's not where the show ends actually, but it's kind of where the show ends, because that's where they go into like end monologue, because we don't actually see this last performance happen. They just start talking like, right, and at this moment we all looked at each other and we knew that this is the last time we would all be together.
Well, okay. So there's that like train scene where they're like on the train.
Oh,
and
yeah,
they make a big deal out of this because it's, true, and there's like a program note about this, but they're like on the train and the Führer literally like walks.
It's Hitler, because yeah, because Rabbi is literally like, I could have shot him and ended everything.
Really, all his survivor's guilt comes out, all his emotions about like not being able to see his friends again. Some of that bleeds into like kind of the present time, where he is like, yeah, then we agreed that, you know, the three of them would stay in Germany if we can each get three other members and like put a singing group back together. We can like still control the assets and still have like some money, and maybe one day we could meet up again, which, you know, obviously by now we know that never happened.
You mentioned in his first Threnody how he's quite hard on himself, you know, like he's right, just like, the fact that we went home is my fault. And I feel like it's even more unhinged in this second one, because he's literally just like, oh my God, I should have shot Hitler. Like, he was right there next to me. I should have just got up and shot him. Like, he probably, yeah, didn't even have a gun. The other thing that happens in the train scene, the group is a boy band, like, and they have a bunch of fangirls, and there's these, oh, there's, yeah, these fangirls on the train that are like, oh my God, they're so hot. I wonder who's the hottest. And then they're literally like, oh, well, it's not like these guys because they're Jewish and that means they can't be attractive, basically.
Right.
And then they go up to the band to ask for signatures. I want to say it's Bobby, but I don't know. Like, someone is like, well, sadly, we're not performing anymore or whatever. And she's like, oh, because of the Jews? And then one of the guys is like, no, because of the Germans.
Which, I think it is also Bobby.
Okay, so they, yeah, really wanted to redeem him a little.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a very powerful statement from him. It's just like such a flipped way to think about it, mm-hmm, you know?
I think the way that they tried to portray Bobby is he's very much like a, I love Germany, I grew up here, I'm a German, like it's part of his identity. But then once the government changes and they start like shutting down Jews and everything, he's like, I don't know if I can.
I want to mention that I believe, because, you know, the band formed in Berlin, because poorest, mm-hmm, and in Berlin they were. And I want to say Bobby is, at least as far as I know, the only person from Berlin.
Oh, okay.
Because, mm-hmm, like, Rabbi obviously escaped from Poland. Lesh, if you remember, he's from Bulgaria, because, right, Bulgaria, yeah, actually saved all their Jews. And at the end, yep, of his end monologue, he's like, we saved all the Jews. I forget where everyone else is from. Like, they might have been from Germany, but I believe Bobby is the only Berlin native.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that also maybe plays into it a little bit.
You'll remember harmony. You'll remember every single day. You'll remember every empty night. You'll remember the chance that was yours to obliterate his. And the truth of it all, when the truth of it is you did nothing, like the thousands who followed, nothing like the millions who stood by and watched and denied. But worst of all, just like them all, you stepped aside.
Like you said, we get monologues of stuff. They're also like talking to older Rabbi. They get to Harry. Harry's, I think, the last one. And Rabbi's like, oh, it should have been you that survived. Like, this was your idea. You led the group. And Harry was also their composer. Like, he created a lot of the music that they did. And Harry's just like, no, like, I think you told it perfectly. That part made me cry. I was just like, oh.
There were a lot of tearjerkers in the ending monologues.
Yeah. Oh, and we didn't really talk about this before, but so then Rabbi like sits in his, I don't know, he has like a beach house or something in California, unclear. He sits down in his armchair. He has like a record player next to him and he's like just playing one of their most famous records, which is Stars in the Night. And they do tease this a lot. This is actually one of the only compositions that's not written, at least completely, by Harry, because Chopin wrote this one and they actually had this like way early from when he first auditioned. He was like, yeah, I've been messing around on this piano. Here's something I came up with. And they never let you hear the whole song until the end, which I thought was smart because they keep teasing it. And it's like, and they tell you it's one of their greatest hits. It's the one that the girls on the train wanted them to sign. It keeps coming up in different places. And then you like finally hear them sing.
I didn't realize it's
the
one on the train as well. That's really cool.
Yeah. So then you like finally hear the song in full, and then they do like a tiny little bit of the opening song at the end. And I was just like, oh, that's such a good ending.
Yeah. I also did like a ton of research on the band after watching it, like I said. But so the three guys, and this is mentioned in the show, this part actually, the three guys that did have to stay in Germany, and like we mentioned earlier, they got like drafted. I think they mentioned something like because they were sort of like enemies of the Nazis, because like they fairly openly opposed them. When they were drafted, they were put on the front line, and amazingly they're like, it's a miracle we survived. I feel like every person's story was really touching because they just all had such a rough time after they separated and never saw each other again. The three Jewish guys escaped to the US. They eventually tried to form their own band. They also didn't do well because US venues wouldn't hire them because they were like, you guys are Germans and we hate Germans now.
Oh yeah.
Which is super sad for them.
Right.
Like super fucked up for them. I was hoping for a silver lining that wasn't mentioned in the show, and then I was just like reading
like there was nothing.
I was like, this shit sucks.
Yeah. You know, I did actually see people complain that it was like, oh, this whole show made it seem like there's going to be a tragedy, but they all survived. And I was like, is the fact that they had to separate and never see each other again not a tragedy?
You know, the more modern take of just like Romeo and Juliet isn't that sad because they're both dead. So like nobody's mourning, like nobody's suffering. Yeah. Like I feel like this is sadder. Like they were not able to reunite. Everything that they worked their asses off for, and all of the dreams that they had that they achieved were like stripped away from them.
Look, look how they tease these stars in the night. The darker the night becomes, the brighter their light becomes. Chill winds wail, the tempest brews, and clouds assail the sky. Through the veil, the stars refuse to die.
I did think it was cool how they choreographed the way they leave the stage after bows, because then they project an image of the actual comedian harmonists. And like a lot of the reviews were saying they didn't really see a case being made for why this story needed to be told, because that's like, I guess sort of the tagline that Barry Manilow has been going with the whole time. He's like, this is an important story. Like, we should know about this. And I can sort of see both sides of that, where it's just like, I think it is really tragic that, you know, they had their work stripped away from them, that they were like broken up due to this thing. But it's also like that probably happened to a lot of people. It is like pretty wild though how big they were. Like, and that's why I kind of wish they had really emphasized how they got famous.
I really don't see that. Like, I don't feel like the argument of, well, there's a lot of people's stories that were forgotten is like a good argument as to why this one shouldn't be told, because these people are so forgotten that when we saw it off Broadway, we couldn't find information about them online, but they were probably more famous than Neil Simon in their time, you know? And then like literally all of their record, they had like over 100 songs, literally all of their shit got burned. And so nobody remembers them anymore.
Right.
I think that's a good enough reason to be told. The execution, like, I don't think it's damning. Like, we did pick out a few problems, but I feel like the premise is good. Like, I really don't see a problem with that.
Yeah. Because they weren't able to use their actual music, it does almost make it feel less real, you know? It feels like more of just like a, oh, this was a story that Barry Manilow made up.
Mm.
But I think like once you internalize that, like, oh shit, like we actually did wipe these people out from history.
Also, I don't know if you saw this, but something kind of funny, because you've been mentioning there's been mixed reviews and Jesse Green didn't seem to like it that much. But Harmony lists themselves as a New York Times critics pick because the Off-Broadway reviewer gave their Off-Broadway production a critics pick badge.
Nice.
So literally on their website, they're like, we're a New York Times critics pick, which honestly, good for them.
I think Chip Zion is definitely the top like Tony contender. I think it's between him and Jonathan Groff for the win, honestly. I almost give a slight edge to Chip Zion just because he's like been around. He's generally liked and like, you know, he's done a lot of theater that people have really enjoyed, most notably like Into the Woods and stuff.
How competitive is Score this year?
I could see Score getting a nomination. It's like weird because, you know, so many of them we haven't heard yet.
Don't you feel like a nomination is likely?
I think a nomination is likely for Harmony.
Just out of the shows that we've actually been able to see so far, this to me has the best score. Like, obviously, yeah. I don't think Here Lies Love is as good. I don't think Back to the Future is going to get picked up.
I would agree with that. I think it would be like this, Limpika, a lot of people have been talking about, The Notebook, and like, I didn't really care for the Suff score that much off-Broadway, but I think they've done a lot of work on it. Water for Elephants, I think, sounds promising also in terms of score. But yeah, like, I think it should be set for a nomination for score.
Do you think it's going to get a nomination for any of the other two, like book and best musical?
So, I mean, I've said I had a lot of issues with the book, but then the book won the Drama Desk Award. So I don't even know, man.
Like, over what? You know?
Here, I can check really quick. It won over Mr. Saturday Night, Six, and Intimate Apparel. What a weird category.
Wow. Okay. There's some competition there.
Yeah.
Dear Evan Hansen won book, right?
I think so.
I think it did. Bad books have won book. I don't know.
I was like, where did Dear Evan Hansen come from? But yeah. But I feel like just based on the reviews, the Tonys might not be as nice. That is it for Harmony. You can keep following us on any podcast platform or follow us on Twitter and Instagram at BottomlessBway or email us at BottomlessBway@gmail.com. And otherwise, we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Ein Kahn ist es vom Urkleidchen, einen hellen Schoß und ein breites Wanderröckchen, das beinahe zu kurz. Und einen großen Zackenkragen und ein blonden Haar hat das Mädel mit den strahlend blauen Augen. Sie heißt Marie, Marie, ich bin verliebt in sie. Es gibt nur eine, denn so ist keine wie die. Und steht Marie, Marie, am Fenster vis-à-vis. Schau ich hinüber und sie schaut drüber, doch weiter kommen wir nie. Marie, Marie, du hast mir's angetan, wieder spät und früh. Schau ich dich an, wie trunken die Blicke funken. Marie, Marie, warum kommst du denn nie? Beim Mondenscheine zu mir, du kleine Marie.